The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Dyke was there. Ball's here to Henderson. Oh, the overhead kick is a good one. Origi!
Another derby where Divock had a say in the outcome. Liverpool's modern-day super sub helping move the Reds back within a point of the league leaders. That plus reflections on the incredible 2001 treble season and the European Cup semi-final against Villarreal. Don't forget, if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, you can read all the articles on Liverpool, everything else on the site. Just head to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. Special price now of £1 a month for 6 months. That's theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. I'm Steve Hothersall, and on the Red Agenda today, James Pearce and Ollie Kay. And it was a derby, Ollie, that felt frustrating quite quickly, and Liverpool had to find a way, and they did in the end.
Yeah, the first half was probably the most awkward 45 minutes Liverpool have had since the turn of the year, really. I mean, they didn't find their rhythm or fluency at all in that first half, and Everton were sitting very deep, frustrating with their stout defending, organised defending, certainly frustrating with some of the antics of Richarlison in particular and the time wasting of Jordan Pickford, which, you know, those are the type of things that teams do, and not necessarily to that extreme all the time, but those are the kind of things teams do, opponents at Anfield do, and Liverpool have generally been very good at finding a way around it. But I'd say for an hour yesterday, it was a real struggle for Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, you can't criticise Everton, James, for the way they approached the game, because they weren't going to out-football Liverpool, were they, in a true footballing manner. But some of the stuff they got up to was quite annoying. And one of the things that fans will take away from this game was Alisson's great moment of humour at the very end, where he took the mickey out of his opposite number at the other end. It will go down in history, this one.
Yeah, I was amazed it didn't feature on the Match of the Day 2 highlights, actually, because that was my favourite moment of the afternoon. And I think it showed how the mood had changed, hadn't it? Because, you know, from the best part of 54,000 people inside Anfield being fuming at some of Everton's antics to reaching a point late on in the game where your own goalkeeper is mimicking Jordan Pickford and everyone can have a good laugh at their expense. Yeah, it was a difficult afternoon. I expected Everton to park the bus. I didn't expect them to go to such lengths in terms of killing the game, which they did, you'd have to say, very successfully for those opening 45 minutes. You know, at times it was probably enough to make even Diego Simeone blush, some of the time wasting, and the Pickford was taking forever, wasn't he, over every goal kick, you know, standing on the ball at free kicks. It became the game that Everton wanted it to be, which was stopping Liverpool building up any kind of momentum. And, you know, I thought watching it, there was almost parallels with the game against Chelsea in 2014 with the Gerrard slip, in terms of Liverpool just losing the plot a little bit in that first half, getting drawn into a game they didn't want to play and they didn't need to play. And, you know, when they went, you know, they had, I think I looked at one point, they had 85% possession, yet they didn't have a shot on target in the first half because they just played. It was too slow, too predictable, never got in behind Everton. But, you know, we've seen it time and time again with this team that I think the massive difference with 2014 is the experience and maturity this team have got. You know, they don't panic in situations like that, and they find a way. And they did it again with the help of two transformative substitutions with the introduction of Diaz and Origi.
Yeah, mentally tough. It's going to be a long chat now about Divock Origi, and why not? This is the man who pulls it out of the bag, Ollie, when there's a big match, a big occasion, something needed. I think maybe we all thought that he'd written his final chapter scoring those big goals, but there he is in a derby again.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be honest, when he came on yesterday, I thought it was so early to be bringing him on. I think he's become not a plan B player, but sort of a plan C, plan D player, where you put him on for maybe the last 10 minutes to cause a bit of chaos or confusion, and just because he's so different to Liverpool's other forwards. And I thought it was very early to go to that 4-2-4. Well, I think it was really 4-2-4 with half an hour left. And I felt it didn't really give Klopp much room to manoeuvre further down the line if it was still 0-0 with 10 minutes to go. But funnily enough, Klopp seems to know these things better than I do. And within 2 minutes, he'd played a big part in the opening goal with that lovely layoff for Salah, who crossed to Robertson with a far post header. And then, of course, the inevitable Origi goal against Everton in the final minutes, just to put the icing on the cake. But it's they were saying in commentary, I think Jamie Carragher was saying on the commentary, he doesn't think that if it had been any other opposition, Origi would have come on so early. And I think that's probably right, because there is this sort of feeling that, you know, it's at Everton, so Origi will score, or Everton are terrified of him. To be honest, I'm sure they're terrified of a lot of Liverpool's players. Quite a lot of Liverpool's players have had big moments against them over the years. Now, Andy Robertson too, of course. But it just seemed to unsettle them. They had this game plan, which was working so well, and they were defending so well, everything that was coming near or into their penalty area. And Origi was just this sort of factor which brought a different dynamic into Liverpool's play, and it's remarkable the record he's got. The record, it's not just the fact that he comes on and scores goals as a substitute, it's the fact that, I mean, not so much yesterday because it was a second in a 2-0 win, but the number of big goals he scored, you know, Wolves early this season, Barcelona, Newcastle away a couple of seasons ago, it's the more famous Everton goal. It's big goals, big moments, and he's a remarkable. It's been a remarkable Liverpool career. It really has.
Called him the modern day super sub at the top of the pod. He's most definitely that, is he? On the article you've written, James, it says an Anfield icon leaving in style, and that is the expectation that he will leave the football club this summer. What he's achieved here truly is out of this world. And actually, if you look at the past few months and the fact he's not even been getting on the bench for some games, but still has the ability to come into this side and make such a huge difference, is testament to him.
Yeah. And I think when you speak to the staff, you know, at Kirby and his teammates as well, I struggle to think of anyone who's as universally loved as Divock Origi. And, you know, and I think, you know, Klopp touched upon it yesterday in terms of just, you know, even when he's barely had a look in for months, you know, his attitude and his commitment around the place is still exemplary. And I think that was why, you know, Klopp knew he could count on him at such a big point in that game. And, he's only played 101 minutes of Premier League football this season, and he scored 3 goals. And as Ollie said then, you know, that includes, you know, the late winner at Wolves, which, you know, how valuable could those couple of points be? And, you know, his impact on Sunday was arguably on a similar level with, you know, I just think he asked different questions of defenders compared to Liverpool's other attackers. You know, he's so strong and powerful, and, you know, linked up with Salah brilliantly in the build-up to Robertson's header, and then the anticipation to get on the end of that acrobatic volley from Diaz. So, I mean, I couldn't believe it when I saw that, you know, he's got as many Merseyside derby goals as Robbie Fowler, more than Sir Kenny Dalglish. You know, I think it's only Rush and Steven Gerrard that have been more prolific against Everton in the modern era. And he's had a Liverpool career like no other, has he, really? I can't think of anyone that's even comparable. Then you think, you know, he's, you know, obviously signed in, you know, 2014, obviously stayed at Lille for that year on loan. You know, he had that, you know, that amazing burst under Klopp initially, when he was, you know, the real driving force initially on the road to the Europa League final. Then that horrible injury against Everton when he was chopped down by Funes Mori. And you could argue that he's maybe never really quite got back to that level again. But, you know, he's been written off so many times. I mean, you know, I've lost count the number of times over the years I've had a piece in my drafts ready to publish on, you know, the Divock Origi years at Liverpool. And you think it's done and dusted. You know, the season on loan at Wolfsburg when he got loads of stick over there. You know, Liverpool agreed a fee with Wolves the following summer. He didn't want to go there. He wanted to stay and fight. You know, Klopp has admitted he would have sold him last summer if anyone had been willing to pay 15 million quid for him. And Klopp was amazed that no one did come in and pay the asking price and offer him the regular football that Klopp certainly thinks that he should be getting at somewhere where he doesn't have quite the level of competition that he has for those frontline spots at Liverpool. But yeah, thank God he's stuck around, because he might only be the sixth choice attacker, and he might only have been, even, you know, if Firmino had been fit, he wouldn't have even been on the bench, I don't think, on Sunday. But his value to Liverpool has just been immense, and, you know, I don't think anyone percentage wise has scored goals that resonate quite like Divock Origi.
I was just looking at it, he's only started 34 Premier League games for Liverpool, and you think of the impact he's had. We could reel off players who have started 34, you know, 30 to 40 league games at Liverpool without ever making the slightest impact on the club's history or the club's, you know, present even. And you look at what Origi has done, his contributions over the course of, well, 7 years, often while really, really on the margins of the team. And it's remarkable. I think with Origi, when teams like Wolves were looking at him in the past and teams in Germany and in France were looking at him, I was thinking, well, he could go there and he would, you know, he could go to, say, a Crystal Palace and be first choice striker or, you know, be part of their front line. But would he have anything like the job satisfaction? I mean, he would go weeks at a time without getting any job satisfaction at Liverpool, I'm sure. But I'm sure that goes the same in a different way for players who are starting regularly in, you know, mid-table or struggling teams. And it's, I mean, he's very much a small fish in a big pond at Liverpool, but I feel like it suits his skill set, suits his personality, and he could go somewhere else and be starting more regularly, and maybe he wouldn't flourish like Klopp expects him to. Maybe he would find, you know, it harder to be the main man. I don't know, because I just find it so hard after all this time at Liverpool to know how good he is in terms of whether he would be a really successful starter or whether he's better as a cog in this important yet often underestimated cog in this Liverpool squad. It's a strange one.
And who's to say, James, that he hasn't got another little chapter to write given the games that are left this season and given the love that the manager clearly has for him? You only had to see the two of them at the end of the game.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be stupid, wouldn't you, to bet against there being another chapter or two in the Origi story. You know, you only have to think back to the back end of 18-19 when, you know, he barely got a look in, did he, for the first half of that season. Then he scored that iconic 96th minute winner against Everton, ended up scoring the goal at Newcastle that took the title race down to the last day, and then settled the Champions League final in Madrid against Tottenham. So I think his impact off the bench on Sunday would have just reaffirmed Klopp's belief that if he does need a plan B between now and the end of the season, which is probably likely, that he does give you something different. And I think we sort of said before about almost they felt like it was an inevitability about he would influence that game. I think also, because, you know, no one has scored more goals for Liverpool in the Premier League era as a substitute than Origi. I think that's 11 now. He's gone ahead of Sturridge. You know, I think it's what it does both to the Liverpool team and to the opposition, because suddenly when he took his tracksuit off yesterday and he was coming on, you know, the buzz around the stadium, it was like, it's Origi, it's Everton, you know, he'll come to the rest. And I think if you're Everton, you're looking at it and you're thinking, oh my God, it's Origi. You know, we didn't think we'd be having to face him today, because he played, what, 2 minutes of football since the FA Cup tie against Norwich right at the very start of March. So he's just been a fantastic servant to the club. And when you throw into the mix things like, you know, the fact he's set up this scholarship with the University of Liverpool, where he's paying for local teenagers to pay for their tuition fees for them to do degrees in law. You know, he doesn't just pay lip service to it. You know, it does really mean a hell of a lot to him, this city and the club. And as Ollie touched on before, I think that's why he has stayed around as long as he has done, because, you know, I think he knows that the day he leaves Liverpool, it will be a step down. And I think he just loves being a part of it. And I think the personality that he's got, you know, he's so laid back, he's so relaxed. You know, James Milner in his book obviously talked about life on planet Origi, didn't he, in terms of wondering what it would be like, because, you know, if only he could have, you know, probably admires the fact he is so chilled out even in such high pressure situations. And I think, you know, that really comes to the fore at the business end of a season as well, because, you know, you only have to think back to that, you know, the Trent Alexander-Arnold quickly taken corner against Barcelona, one of the, you know, the truly iconic Anfield goals. And, you know, I think a lot of players would have snatched at that, but the way that Origi is, you know, he tucked it away like there was absolutely nothing riding on it. The great thing for me was that I was actually going to write a piece on Origi this week, but I thought it was going to be, you know, a bit of a sad piece in terms of it looked like he was destined to kind of leave out the back door this summer rather than the front, because you couldn't see where he was going to get a chance. And I thought, you know, after all he's given for the club, I think that would have been harsh. And yeah, suddenly he's got another chapter to the story. And, you know, as we said, I think he'll definitely still have a part to play in this running.
You can't discount him. What a catalogue he's got now. A lot of the headlines are Origi-based after the game, but let's turn to the first goal scorer, Ollie, in Andy Robertson. First goal in front of the Kop. And I saw Alan Shearer tweet he should be considered as perhaps a nominee for the player of the season.
I think Liverpool will not be short of candidates or contenders for that. I mean, you could look at somebody like Joel Matip, who I think would be a shoe-in for a team of the season. I wouldn't expect him to get PFA Player of the Year or the Writers Player of the Year or anything like that, but he, to me, has been outstanding. Robertson had that quiet period in a bit of a lull around sort of September, October, a bit of a slow start to the season. And Tsimikas was coming in and playing well, and Robertson, he played in the Euros in the summer, hadn't he, and had all the extra exertion of trying to lead Scotland to the World Cup, which, they're still not there yet, but they've got a chance. He seemed to be slower out of the blocks than we've seen him before, I would say. But yeah, as the season's gone on, he's been magnificent. And it was a really well-taken goal. But you think of the status he enjoys among the fans and among his teammates and so on. But he's not really had particularly a moment like that at Anfield. And I think it was clearly a big moment for him yesterday, a really big moment for him. And I don't know what more could be said about him, but he's just outstanding. And as we go into the final period of the season, he seems to be getting better and better again.
Whilst he scored that goal and he had a great game, perhaps on the other side, Trent found things much more difficult. Passing certainly wasn't on the level he'd expect. Set pieces as well, James. It wasn't a game that Trent will look back on and go, I performed to my level.
No, he wasn't quite at the ridiculously high standards that we've come to expect from him. But he's not a machine, is he? I think it's probably unrealistic to think he's gonna absolutely light the place up every single time. And I think you'd have to, Anthony Gordon had a decent game for Everton. He was certainly their one threat really with his pace on the counter attack. And Liverpool did struggle to handle him at times. I think.
What do you make of his dive, James?
I was absolutely baffled that Lampard afterwards was still trying to claim that the dive was a penalty. I think I heard him say that there was some contact from Cater, which, when you look at it, I mean, Cater doesn't even make a challenge. Gordon just throws himself over the leg. It's a blatant dive and an obvious yellow card. And I think that probably has an influence on Stuart Atwell with the penalty shout in the second half, which I think could have gone either way, the one with Gordon and Joel Matip. I think the first time I saw it, I must admit, I thought probably penalty, because I think when a defender puts his hands on an attacker like that, you are running the risk. I thought back to that penalty decision. I think, what was it, Lovren on Calvert-Lewin a few years back. And to be honest, you'd say that the Lovren one on Calvert-Lewin was softer, I think, than that. And that one was given, I think, by Craig Paulson. But when you actually watch the replays back, I think Gordon actually steps across Matip and actually creates some of the contact himself and makes it look worse than I thought it actually was. So I think that's a 50-50 shout. I think it's one of those ones where if Atwell gives it, there's no way that VAR overturn it. Yet, once Atwell had not given it, there was no way that VAR was going to tell him to go to the screen and take a look. But I do think that in situations like that, players can be their own worst enemies, because I'm sure after what Gordon had done in the first half, that was in Atwell's mind. Has he gone down far too easily again? I didn't come away thinking that Liverpool were lucky based on decisions. I just thought, Everton had a very limited but effective game plan for a long time. And I just thought with the quality that Liverpool have got, squad-wise off the bench, they were just too good in the end. I wouldn't say there was lots of decisions that went their way. I think you could have, I was amazed that Richarlison stayed on late on. Whenever anyone lashes out like he did at Henderson, that to me was a nailed on straight red. And and I thought Atwell was weak, especially first half, in terms of very, very slow to clamp down on the time wasting. And then that kind of created that ill feeling that, obviously boiled over into a lot of kind of pushing and shoving at times.
Two things I was just going to mention if I could. One is that the one that really infuriates me is when a player goes down like Richarlison kept doing, when I think we all suspect there was nothing wrong with him. I hate this idea that you're meant to stop the play.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the referee has the choice to stop play if he thinks there's a concussion issue. But the opposition shouldn't have a duty to stop play. The opposition should have the right to play on, which Liverpool did. And I'm sure, you know, Doucouré came flying into Fabinho as if outraged that Liverpool hadn't stopped play. But I imagine Doucouré and his teammates were probably just as annoyed with Richarlison for staying down when there was clearly nothing wrong with him. And the other thing I was just going to say about Alexander-Arnold is Anthony Gordon got into that play, that space behind him a number of times. And a lot of the sort of talk has been about him, Alexander-Arnold, being caught out of position. That's not really his position. He's not meant to be there when Liverpool are attacking. And normally what you get is Henderson, in particular, being very diligent at filling in and occupying that space when Alexander-Arnold went forward. And they didn't really have that yesterday with the midfield that they picked. So I think against Villarreal, against Danjuma in particular, I think we'll probably see Henderson dropping into that area to make sure that that space isn't left exposed behind Alexander-Arnold.
Right, they're still going for all these titles. Let's talk about the title running, and going for a quadruple's a rarity, but then trying to navigate a treble was pretty hard in 2001. So we're going to maybe compare and contrast the two. James, if you go back to 2001, they managed to deal with all the hurdles that were placed in front of them. It was a different treble given. Manchester United wrapped up the league by April the 14th, but nonetheless, going for three trophies is pretty hard. When you look back, did you have confidence then on what Liverpool were trying to achieve?
No. I think it surpassed all expectations that season, especially when you think, you know, they made really, really hard work of lifting the League Cup that year against Birmingham City. And yeah, I don't think anyone at that point thought that it would go the way it did. You know, of course, there was the desperate scramble to get into the Champions League spots as well. But I think when you speak to players from that team, and I think probably the big parallel for me with this season, it's just when you do win something, how it can act as a catalyst, and you do suddenly build up this momentum where, you know, despite the fact that, you know, playing every 3 or 4 days is ridiculously intense and difficult physically and mentally, but when you keep on winning, you know, you have this momentum behind you where you feel like you're almost unstoppable at times. And I think that's where there are similarities at the minute, you know, because that was a crazy season, 2001, you know, especially, you know, with, you know, the cup final against Arsenal as well, you know, a game again that Liverpool had absolutely no right to win. Yet, you know, that was, Arsenal was so superior on the day in that final, yet, you know, those two iconic goals from Michael Owen, and, you know, it's a very different story. And then, you know, I was in Dortmund for the UEFA Cup final, you know, which, and again, you know, that final, because of what happened in Istanbul a few years later, doesn't really get talked about anything like as much as it should do, because, you know, it was such a roller coaster night that. And of course, you know, what we won't ever see again is a European final like that, settled by a golden goal with Gary McAllister's free kick going in off the defender. So and then even then they couldn't celebrate, could they? Because they had to go and beat Charlton to qualify for the Champions League. So yeah, I think there are parallels, just that the momentum that you can build up when, you know, and how success does breed success.
For people of a certain vintage, I'd include you, Ollie, this was probably a really important season. And I do wonder whether it's given enough credit. I had the time of my life in this season. What do you think about whether it's reflected on enough?
Well, I think it's probably underestimated for two reasons. One of which is, as James said, Istanbul coming quite soon afterwards, 2005, which overtook it, really. And the other one is, you know, Manchester United had won a treble, you'd have to say a better treble, 2 years earlier. And I think it probably, you know, people were talking about, well, United fans were talking about Liverpool having won a plastic treble, you know, League Cup, FA Cup, UEFA Cup, rather than Premier League, FA Cup, Champions League. And look, it wasn't the treble. It wasn't the stuff that dreams were made of. It wasn't the two big trophies that Liverpool really regard as the most important ones. But it was a massive achievement. If you think of what Liverpool could win this season, for all the talk of quadruples, they might not end up with three trophies or four trophies. Three trophies in a season is enormous. And I think what was particularly significant for Liverpool at that time is since that last league title 11 years earlier, they'd won one FA Cup, one League Cup. They'd won nothing for 6 years. They'd had this series of title challenges which had fizzled out. They'd had a series of Champions League qualification tilts, which had fizzled out, and they'd ended up sort of dropping out of the top two, dropping out of the top three. They'd got to various semi-finals and finals and lost. They'd become a team which had forgotten how to win. And in over the course of that season, those few months, they remembered how to win and suddenly gained this real sort of, you know, became a really, really good cup team. And you look back at the finals and you think, well, God, it looked like they forgot how to win in those finals because they were really poor against Birmingham in the League Cup, distinctly second best against Arsenal in the FA Cup. You know, we're lucky to be clinging on at 1-0 down with 10 minutes to go. And the Alaves game in Dortmund was just an absolute, it was just chaos. It was totally ill-disciplined. The opposite of what the football which had got them there, which had been totally disciplined and mentally strong. But in all three of those finals, they dug in and found a way and became a team that would win cups again. I'm sure without that, you would not get the Istanbul triumph of 2005. And it was absolutely massive for Liverpool and massive for the, you know, when Gerard Houllier died, you know, nearly 18 months ago, there was, you know, a lot of talk of, you know, where he ranked amongst Liverpool's managers. And look, that is a very high bar. But when you were able to say that, you know, the cups that he won and the 3-in-1 season, and he would add the Community Shield and the Super Cup the following season, and talk of five trophies that year. It was massive. That year was massive for Liverpool, and it was a really significant, I would say, not just achievement but foundations for the next few years, which obviously brought more.
Of course, there's a European Cup semi-final, first leg at Anfield to come. We haven't got time, really, to go into it in depth. Can you give us one thought, guys, each on what lies ahead against Villarreal? Certainly shouldn't be taken easy, Ollie.
No, definitely not. I mean, I was at Old Trafford when they somehow were beaten 2-1 by Manchester United in the group stage. They were brilliant that night. They really surprised me, and they should have been about 3-0, 4-0 up. They were really good. Dan Juma, I mentioned earlier, might not have sort of turned too many heads when he was at Bournemouth, but he's a really, really talented player. And you know, he will be a handful. And I think you look at the games that they've since then beaten, knocked out Juventus comfortably, knocked out Bayern Munich. They are no mugs, and they will be, you know, it's probably the more favourable of the draws Liverpool could have got, but it's not an easy draw.
Looking forward to it, James.
Yeah, can't wait. Yeah, I think as Ollie said, they do command respect when you look at the teams they've knocked out to get this far, and I think, you know, it probably won't be too dissimilar to the way that Everton set up. I don't think they'll take too many risks. I think Emery will have them set up to frustrate and thwart Liverpool, and it might be a night when patience is a virtue, but I think Klopp will freshen it up. I think wouldn't be surprised at all to see Konate come into the back line. You'd imagine Henderson would start as well, and Diaz after that. You know, we've barely spoken about him, have we? But you know, he was absolutely electric again, wasn't he, when he came off the bench against Everton. So yeah, so you know, another, you know, the huge weeks just keep on coming, don't they? It's just an unbelievable time to be following the club when you think, you know, you've just seen off Manchester United and Everton having won an FA Cup semi-final at Wembley, and now you're looking ahead towards a Champions League semi, you know, and with a tricky trip to Newcastle in between those two legs. So, but yeah, the great thing for Liverpool at the minute is they go into it, you know, with so much belief, and I think also Sunday proved they can win games in so many different ways, and you know, I think that will stand them in good stead for the challenges coming up.
Just never stops, does it? We'll just finish with a well done to the Liverpool women who thrashed Sheffield United 6-1 before their trophy lift at Prenton Park. So fantastic for them. They got to do it in front of a record crowd at Prenton Park at the end. My thanks, of course, to Ollie and James. And thank you for listening and talking to us on the Red Agenda. Always appreciate any communication feedback from you guys. And we'll see you on the next one.